From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Today is the last day of the General Assembly session. By midnight, it must decide between Governor Hogan's call for mandatory minimum prison sentences for repeat gun offenders and arguments that more jail time would not address the roots of Baltimore's crime wave. As the election nears, it's tense between the Democratic legislature and the Republican governor, as when he vetoed a bill to cut his power in decisions about school buildings.
This bill, if allowed to become law, would be an unmitigated disaster for our state, which would create a disgusting cesspool of cronyism and corruption.
What else will echo in the campaign? It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're On the Record. The General Assembly has a little more than 14 hours to solve some thorny legislative issues that have eluded compromise for months. The crushing wave of homicides in Baltimore, for example. Is the state legislature going to agree on any changes in state law that might help? The new industry being created around medical marijuana. Is the legislature going to step in to make sure that African Americans get some of the licenses? Is the state legislature going to demand changes in safety features in public schools? Let's find out how this last day looks to two political analysts who have kept their eyes on the legislature for years. Barry Raskovar writes for the blog Political Maryland. Welcome back to the show, Barry.
Thank you.
And thanks for being here, even though allergies are attacking your voice.
Listeners will hear that very clearly.
Yes, indeed. Charles Robinson is a political reporter for State Circle on Maryland Public Television. He was also associate producer of MPT's award-winning Hard Working Families series. Hi, Charles. Thanks for being here.
I am so excited. It's Sine Die Day.
Sine Die, the Latin word meaning no tomorrow.
No tomorrow.
This is the last day of the legislature.
Is it.
And how interesting that you're so excited about it. I think I'm interested in particular because I'm not sure there's a lot of suspense left today.
No, it's not really. There are some things I think people ought to watch and how it evolves. Governor Hogan has touted this idea of we need a comprehensive crime bill. It got kind of meshed into a bill that Senator Zirkin put forward. It's let me make sure I get the right number. Senate Bill 122, but that's pretty much dead because of the length of sentencing for individuals who use guns in crimes. They wanted to put a 40-year mandatory minimum sentence.
That was Governor Hogan's proposal, correct?
And that went to the House Judiciary Committee, and it got chewed up like chewing gum on the side of your mouth, literally.
So I know that the House worked on that bill on Saturday, the House of Delegates, and what does it look like now?
It is broken up into several different pieces now. The sentencing process that was being heard has been pretty much died, but they are looking at other elements, which include expungement.
Explain what, and Barry, feel free to jump in if your voice allows. Expungement has not really been a feature of state law in Maryland, has it?
It came up in last year in the Justice Reinvestment Act, but it didn't go anywhere. The idea is simply this, that after you have done your time, you get your records expunged because this deals with individuals who want to go back to work. And if you have a felony record, it impedes your ability to get a job. And people in the legislature believe that that's another part that should go on with this. Barry, you want to chime in?
Yeah. Expungement in this case, the problem for those who are fighting the bill is that it's expungement of your record after 15 years. Well, by then it may be too late to help you get
rebuild
a job.
Rebuild your life, yeah.
And rebuild your life. There are two bills, basically, that are now still alive. The one has this expungement provision, which a lot of the liberal groups like, but it also has a 10-year mandatory minimum.
So it's not the 40 years that you mm-hmm. were talking about,
for
Charles.
For a second offense. A violent crime with a gun. And this, a lot of the liberal organizations are fighting. It's going back to the Senate. I suspect that it will pass because it will have a lot of Republican support.
But Republicans are a minority. Is that enough to push it over?
Well, it won't be just Republicans, but the Democratic majority will be split. But there should be enough Republican votes to put it over the top.
And what is the argument, if there is one, about what this does to or about the crime wave in Baltimore, the homicides?
Well, that's an interesting question, because you have a deeper argument going on now. And it revolves around whether you're going to have a police department prosecutor's office that is tough on crime, or is it going to take more of a social worker type of approach and reduce the emphasis on tough criminal enforcement and punishment?
Charles, you want to jump in?
Yeah, this whole idea that people continue, in fact, in all of the hearings, it was reiterated many, many times, the number of murders that happened in Baltimore. Now, that is not true today. Well, let me say that the number has been reduced. It is not on the same pace that we were last year with the number of murders here in Baltimore. But this idea that we have to solve this problem, and one way that some legislators believe to solve the problem is to get tough on crime. There is also a separate group that believes that this idea of you want to go back to the 1980s where lock them up and throw them away, and that all you do is build a prison industrial complex, because you're going to need to have space for these people if you're going to lock them up. And so this yin and yang pull, if you will, is what's kind of like at the heart of this whole kind of crime bill. The last part that I'd like to talk about is that, you know, people have looked at what has happened at the violence in schools, especially the most recent one, and say we need resource officers in all of our schools across the state. The question is, who's going to pay for it, and how are you going to pay for it, and who trains these people? I think most jurisdictions now believe that you have to have a police officer or an officer who has been trained by the police departments or whatever law enforcement be in these schools. And I don't think you get any argument from anybody on that. But the question is, where's that money going to come from?
And it's not fully answered by the legislature in their bill. That's a question. The counties in Baltimore City are going to have to scrape by, basically, to get these resource officers and other security practices put in place, at least for a year. And then next year, I would suspect there will be a major push in the legislature and probably by the governor to put a lot more money into school safety.
That's Barry Rescovar, who writes about Maryland government and politics for the Balad Political Maryland here on The Record on WIPR. Also with us, Charles Robinson, who covers the legislature and other issues for Maryland Public Television. You mentioned the resource officers. They also voted, the legislature has voted to ban bump stocks, correct? That was also an attempt to address mass shootings in schools.
Yeah, let me just say that I don't think anybody will say, yeah, bump stocks are a good thing. But you do have Second Amendment individuals who believe that you should not have any rules governing guns. Here's the most interesting part about this whole debate that I heard. Someone asked, well, how many people own bump stocks in this state? Someone suggested it is only 9 people. God knows, are we, you know, the whole idea, everything needs a hammer as opposed to kill a fly, you know.
And so this, it's almost, you're saying it's almost a symbolic issue in terms of how it plays out in Maryland.
It is symbolic.
It's symbolic. And the other issue that's still alive, has not been passed yet, is the red flag bill, which would allow a judge to take a gun away from someone who's considered a dangerous individual. Family members are worried about their son. He might do something, and he may have a weapon, you know, in his room. They can go to court. The argument right now is, can, say, neighbors go to court and try to persuade a judge to take a weapon away, at least temporarily, from an individual? And can the judge then order a mental health examination for this individual? So that's still active today.
Where does it stand?
I believe it's in the Senate for final approval.
This is a bill that's been championed about Moms Demand Action. They show up. They've been showing up all session long in red T-shirts, and they got a big group that comes down, because one of the things they want to stop is specifically as it relates to domestic violence. You know, in my note to you, I said, this is really the year of the woman in Annapolis, and this is one of their main issues. But there are several others that go along with it. Obviously, the Me Too movement, the sexual harassment. You know, we had probably one of the more unusual press conferences with Senator Kagan, who
Senator Sherrill Kagan of Montgomery County, Democrat,
where she accused a lobbyist of basically touching her on a tush at a bar, and he said, "I didn't do it." And then she rolled out a piece of videotape, and the question was,
I was going to say, the videotape was not completely clear on either side.
Right. But this rolling movement, if you will, of women empowerment, not only across the country, but here in this state, is palatable. You look, I'm going to tell you, in 2019, there are going to be a lot more women in this legislature than there have ever been.
Well, there are a lot of women now in very high positions, powerful positions in the legislature right now. And Charles is absolutely right. There will be a lot more after the next election. It's interesting. I got a phone call this last week from former Congresswoman Beverly Byron, and she's still upset at the fact that there are no women in the congressional delegation representing Maryland. Whereas when she was in Congress, four of the 8 congresspersons were women. Maryland has been ahead of the country in that regard, and I think if you look at the legislature and the way it actually functions, women are movers already, and they'll be even more powerful movers after the next election.
On that happy thought, we need to take a quick break here. Charles Robinson of Maryland Public Television and Barry Raskovar of the blog Political Maryland are staying with us. When we're back, we'll talk about some of what the legislature has passed and how these legislative issues will or won't resonate in this year's political campaigns. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're looking at the end of the 2018 session of the Maryland General Assembly on its last day, sine die, with Charles Robinson, who covers the legislature and other issues for Maryland Public Television, and Barry Raskovar, who writes about Maryland government and politics for the blog Political Maryland. Charles, an issue the General Assembly has been unable to solve for at least 2 years that I'm aware of is getting more racial diversity into the medical marijuana industry that is taking off in Maryland. What's the problem? What does it look like they're going to do about it today?
Well, first of all, this time last year, a bill that was moving got stuck in a drawer, which is the whole idea to kill a bill, stick it in a drawer.
Well, on the last day of the legislature last year.
The Legislative Black Caucus was upset that the legislative leaders didn't bring it up. So this year, they've made a concerted effort to make sure there is a piece of legislation that is going to give it possibly, and I have to say possibly, because it's not an assured deal, that there will be minority representation as it relates to marijuana licensing or cannabis licensing. So we do have a bill, and I think it will pass. It is passed the Senate committee. It came out of committee. It went over to the House, and now it's back in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try and hash out the last little bit of this. The idea is real simple. Let's expand the number of licensees, okay? Let's just be candid. Once you get one of these licenses, I don't want to say it's a license to grow money, but guess what? You're going to make a little, you're going to make a lot of money.
This is both growing,
processing, and dispensing, you know. And this idea of expanding the number of licensees gives the potential for one of the licensees to be a minority. I think they're thinking about two or three.
Four.
And go ahead, Barry.
So essentially, are they setting quotas?
No, they're just expanding.
Well, yes, it is a quota. It is a quota.
See, I don't see it as a quota, but I think it's the expansion.
It's the expansion, but four are as the bill is written, it's going to be virtually impossible for anybody but a minority to get one of these four licenses. And the problem here is a broader problem with the way the state has gone about setting up this medical marijuana program, in that they're virtually giving away these licenses that could well turn out to be a license to print money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you could look upon this as an enrichment bill. Whoever gets these licenses, and it's, I think, 14 new licenses, it could be flush with cash once they get up and running. And the state is virtually giving this away for nothing.
So far, most of the people who have gotten licenses have not been minorities.
Right, although a lot of the companies that have gotten the licenses have minority members as shareholders, if you will. However, the demand has been from the Black Caucus that they want their fair share, basically. Right. And it is an enrichment type of bill. But the problem is that legally, can you designate these four licenses in this way and not be in violation of the law?
Right. And the other part is that the Legislative Black Caucus has made this simple argument. Blacks are a large users of marijuana, and why not us? And, you know, Delegate Cheryl Glenn, who's been, you know,
the head of the Black Caucus.
No, she's no longer the head. She's
the
former head. The former head. And, you know, I talked to her about this, and, you know, Cheryl was out in front, Delegate Glenn, let me make sure I call her by her former title, was out in front of this long before it was popular. And this whole idea, because her former husband suffered in the latter stages of his life, and she said she did not want to see people suffer like that.
Yeah, it's a real shame that Maryland has messed up the process of allowing medical marijuana to be dispensed. But it's been just a debacle almost from day one. And it could well continue with this bill. We could end up in litigation yet again that's going to delay the award of these licenses for a while. It's unfortunate because there are these people
who need it,
who very much need it, right, and can't get it.
And we are still we're not there yet, but we're close to having legalized marijuana in the state of Maryland. It comes general marijuana.
Father, for a whole nother show that we should talk about. That's Charles Robinson of Maryland Public Television here on The Record on WIPR. Also here is Barry Raskovar of the blog Political Maryland. We're talking about the last day of the legislative session today. Barry, I want to talk about legislation that Governor Hogan has vetoed and vetoes the Democratic legislature has overridden. Governor Hogan, we played a clip at the beginning of the show of Governor Hogan explaining last week that he was vetoing a bill because it would create, quote, a disgusting cesspool of cronyism and corruption, end quote. That is the very legislation to which you have devoted your latest column on politicalmaryland.com. Tell us about it.
Well, everything Hogan said is pure political campaign propaganda.
You better tell them what this is about. This is about school construction.
This is about school construction funds and how they're allocated and whether the Board of Public Works, controlled by Governor Hogan and Controller Peter Francho, whether they're going to have the final say. The legislature decided they should not, and they've created a new commission that will dole out the school construction funds based on the analysis by a professional staff as to which schools have the most pressing needs. And here's the thing, when Hogan talks about cronyism and when he talks about corruption, well, Governor Hogan will be controlling this commission.
He'll have most of the appointees.
Yes, he has most of the appointees.
But it's not as direct a control as
the Board of Public Works now has. And he cannot use the Board of Public Works to grandstand, as he and the controller have done, on a regular basis, browbeating local education officials over school funding issues. That's been taken away from him. But this whole notion that it's somehow going to be corrupt, I don't understand that at all, because for at least 40 years, there's been not a whiff of corruption in the school construction funding program. It's pure political campaign rhetoric.
And the legislature also wrote another veto that I'm aware of, and this was a bill that will, because the veto was overridden, allow teachers to use an outside arbitrator when they are being disciplined. Have I missed any vetoes or any overrides in this session?
No, just wait. We might get some more. It's always funny because, you know, on the last day, one of the reasons why these vetoes are important, specifically as it relates to the governor, if he doesn't sign them, they go into law. But if he vetoes them while the legislature is in session, they can come back and override it. Right. If not, they're going to wait until 2019.
Except this time.
Yeah.
Explain.
Because there's a provision in the state constitution that when a new legislature is elected, they cannot vote on a bill that was passed by the old legislature. That's forbidden. So anything that the governor vetoes now stands.
Unless they feel so strongly, they try to call a special session.
Unless they call a special session this summer, which is highly, highly unlikely.
In an election year.
Yes, highly
Nobody
unlikely.
Nobody wants to be in Annapolis during an election year.
So what do you see as veto bait?
Well, there's one particular one that would put two teachers on the state school board. And the two teachers would have to be nominated by the teachers union that Hogan has been fighting for 3.5 years. I think that is the prime candidate for a veto. It's still up in the air. It'll probably be passed sometime today.
Right. And watch this crime bill. I mean, there are some things that the governor does not like. He's not thrilled with expungement. If the expungement aspect of a piece of legislation comes up, he may opt to go, you know what, I don't like this. And
how would that play, as I assume any decision now is being looked at through a political lens for the campaign?
Sure.
Would vetoing the crime bill be a plus for Governor Hogan in the election?
No, see, I think the exact opposite. I think that the governor runs on this. They didn't do what I told them to do. I mean, they are soft on crime. Yeah, we got a purple state, but understand this. There are a lot of Democrats who voted for Larry Hogan. And you might not like it, but guess what? He's still the most popular politician in the state.
Yeah.
I'll give you the last word, Barry.
Okay, yes. Everything that happens from here till midnight has to do with the election. And it's funny because probably the results of the election won't even depend on what the legislature does or doesn't do. It will depend on whether or not we have a national Democratic wave against Donald Trump that is so strong that it could even threaten Governor Hogan here in Maryland.
Well, we'll have a lot more to talk about the election, and I hope I can ask both of you back to to discuss that in a straightforward
way. Happy
signy die. Barry Raskovar writes about Maryland government and politics for the blog Political Maryland. Charles Robinson covers the legislature and other issues for Maryland Public Television. We have links to their reporting at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Thanks for listening this morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Hope you'll be with us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.
From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Today is the last day of the General Assembly session. By midnight, it must decide between Governor Hogan's call for mandatory minimum prison sentences for repeat gun offenders and arguments that more jail time would not address the roots of Baltimore's crime wave. As the election nears, it's tense between the Democratic legislature and the Republican governor, as when he vetoed a bill to cut his power in decisions about school buildings.
This bill, if allowed to become law, would be an unmitigated disaster for our state, which would create a disgusting cesspool of cronyism and corruption.
What else will echo in the campaign? It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at WYPR.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@WYPR.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The General Assembly has a little more than 14 hours to solve some thorny legislative issues that have eluded compromise for months. The crushing wave of homicides in Baltimore, for example. Is the state legislature going to agree on any changes in state law that might help? The new industry being created around medical marijuana. Is the legislature going to step in to make sure that African Americans get some of the licenses? Is the state legislature going to demand changes in safety features in public schools? Let's find out how this last day looks to two political analysts who have kept their eyes on the legislature for years. Barry Raskovar writes for the blog Political Maryland. Welcome back to the show, Barry.
Thank you.
And thanks for being here, even though allergies are attacking your voice.
Listeners will hear that very clearly.
Yes, indeed. Charles Robinson is a political reporter for State Circle on Maryland Public Television. He was also associate producer of MPT's award-winning Hardworking Families series. Hi, Charles. Thanks for being here.
I am so excited. It's Sine Die Day.
Sine Die, the Latin word meaning no tomorrow.
No tomorrow.
This is the last day of the legislature. And how interesting that you're so excited about it. I think I'm interested in particular because I'm not sure there's a lot of suspense left today.
No, it's not really. I mean, there are some things I think people ought to watch and how it evolves. You know, Governor Hogan has touted this idea of we need a comprehensive crime bill. It got kind of meshed into a bill that Senator Zirkin put forward. It's let me make sure I get the right number. Senate Bill 122, but that's pretty much dead because of the length of sentencing for individuals who use guns in crimes. They wanted to put a 40-year maximum, not maximum,
mandatory minimum sentence. That was Governor Hogan's proposal,
correct? And that went to the House Judiciary Committee, and it got chewed up like, chewing gum on the side of your mouth, literally.
So I know that the House worked on that bill on Saturday, the House of Delegates, and what does it look like now?
It is broken up into several different pieces now. The sentencing process that was being heard has been pretty much died. But they are looking at other elements, which include expungement.
Explain what, and Barry, feel free to jump in if your voice allows. Expungement has really not been a feature of state law in Maryland,
has it? It came up in last year in the Justice Reinvestment Act, but it didn't go anywhere. The idea is simply this, that after you have done your time, you get your records expunged, because this deals with individuals who want to go back to work. And if you have a felony record, it impedes your ability to get a job. And people in the legislature believe that that's another part that should go on with this. Barry, you want to chime in?
Yeah. Expungement in this case, the problem for those who are fighting the bill is that it's expungement of your record after 15 years. Well, by then it may be too late to help you get
rebuild
a job
your life, yeah,
and rebuild your life. There are two bills basically that are now still alive. The one has this expungement provision, which a lot of the liberal groups like, but it also has a 10-year mandatory minimum.
So it's not the 40 years that mm-hmm. you were talking about,
for
Charles.
For a second offense, a violent crime with a gun. And this, a lot of the liberal organizations are fighting. It's going back to the Senate. I suspect that it will pass because it will have a lot of Republican support.
But Republicans are a minority. Is that enough to push it over?
Well, it won't be just Republicans, but the Democratic majority will be split. But there should be enough Republican votes to put it over the top.
And what is the argument, if there is one, about what this does to or about the crime wave in Baltimore, the homicides?
Well, that's an interesting question, because you have a deeper argument going on now, and it revolves around whether you're going to have a police department and prosecutor's office that is tough on crime, or is it going to take more of a social worker type of approach and reduce the emphasis on tough criminal enforcement and punishment?
Charles, you want to jump in?
Yeah, this whole idea that people continue, in fact, in all of the hearings it was reiterated many, many times, the number of murders that happened in Baltimore. Now, that is not true today. Well, let me say that the number has been reduced. It is not on the same pace that we were last year with the number of murders here in Baltimore. But this idea that we have to solve this problem, and one way that some legislators believe to solve the problem is to get tough on crime. There is also a separate group that believes that this idea of you want to go back to the 1980s, where lock them up and throw them away, and that all you do is build a prison industrial complex, because you're going to need to have space for these people if you're going to lock them up. And so this yin and yang pull, if you will, is what's kind of like at the heart of this whole kind of crime bill. The last part that I'd like to talk about is that, you know, people have looked at what has happened at the violence in schools, especially the most recent one, and say we need resource officers in all of our schools across the state. The question is, who's going to pay for it, and how are you going to pay for it, and who trains these people? I think most jurisdictions now believe that you have to have a police officer or an officer who has been trained by the police departments or whatever law enforcement be in these schools. And I don't think you get any argument from anybody on that. But the question is, where's that money going to come from?
And it's not fully answered by the legislature in their bill. That's a question. The counties in Baltimore City are going to have to scrape by, basically, to get these resource officers and other security practices put in place. at least for a year. And then next year, I would suspect that there will be a major push in the legislature and probably by the governor to put a lot more money into school safety.
That's Barry Rescovar, who writes about Maryland government and politics for the blog Political Maryland here on The Record on WIPR. Also with us, Charles Robinson, who covers the legislature and other issues for Maryland Public Television. You mentioned the resource officers. They also voted, the legislature has voted to ban bump stocks, correct? That was also an attempt to address mass shootings in schools.
Yeah, these, let me just say that I don't think anybody will say, yeah, bump stocks are a good thing. But you do have Second Amendment individuals who believe that you should not have any rules governing guns. Here's the most interesting part about this whole debate that I heard. Someone asked, well, how many people own bump stocks in this state? Someone suggested it is only 9 people. God knows, are we, you know, the whole idea, everything needs a hammer as opposed to kill a fly, you know.
And so this, it's almost, you're saying it's almost a symbolic issue in terms of how it plays out in Maryland.
It is symbolic.
It's symbolic. And the other issue that's still alive, has not been passed yet, is the red flag bill, which would allow a judge to take a gun away from someone who's considered a dangerous individual. Family members are worried about their son. He might do something, and he may have a weapon, you know, in his room. They can go to court. The argument right now is, can, say, neighbors go to court and try to persuade a judge to take a weapon away, at least temporarily, from an individual? And can the judge then order a mental health examination for this individual? So that's still active today.
Where does it stand?
I believe it's in the Senate for final approval.
This is a bill that's been championed about Moms Demand Action. They show up, they've been showing up all session long in red T-shirts, and they got a big group that comes down, because one of the things they want to stop is specifically as it relates to domestic violence. You know, in my note to you, I said, this is really the year of the woman in Annapolis, and this is one of their main issues. But there are several others that go along with it. Obviously, the Me Too movement, the sexual harassment. You know, we had probably one of the more unusual press conferences with Senator Kagan, who
Senator Sherrill Kagan of Montgomery County, Democrat,
where she accused a lobbyist of basically touching her on a tush at a bar, and he said, "I didn't do it." And then she rolled out a piece of videotape, and the question was,
I was going to say, the videotape was not completely clear on either side.
Right. But this rolling movement, if you will, of women empowerment, not only across the country, but here in this state, is palatable. You look, I'm going to tell you, in 2019, there are going to be a lot more women in this legislature than there have ever been.
Well, there are a lot of women now in very high positions, powerful positions in the legislature right now. And Charles is absolutely right. There will be a lot more after the next election. It's interesting. I got a phone call this last week from former Congresswoman Beverly Byron, and she's still upset at the fact that there are no women in the congressional delegation representing Maryland, whereas when she was in Congress, four of the 8 congresspersons were women. Maryland has been ahead of the country in that regard, and I think if you look at the legislature and the way it actually functions, women are movers already, and they'll be even more powerful movers after the next election.
On that happy thought, we need to take a quick break here. Charles Robinson of Maryland Public Television and Barry Rescovar of the blog Political Maryland are staying with us. When we're back, we'll talk about some of what the legislature has passed and how these legislative issues will or won't resonate in this year's political campaigns. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're looking at the end of the 2018 session of the Maryland General Assembly on its last day, sine die, with Charles Robinson, who covers the legislature and other issues for Maryland Public Television, and Barry Raskovar, who writes about Maryland government and politics for the blog Political Maryland. Charles, an issue the General Assembly has been unable to solve for at least 2 years that I'm aware of is getting more racial diversity into the medical marijuana industry that is taking off in Maryland. What's the problem? What does it look like they're going to do about it today?
Well, first of all, this time last year, a bill that was moving got stuck in a drawer, which is the whole idea to kill a bill, stick it in a drawer.
Well, on the last day of the legislature last year.
The Legislative Black Caucus was upset that the legislative leaders didn't bring it up. So this year, they've made a concerted effort to make sure there is a piece of legislation that is going to give it possibly, and I have to say possibly, because it's not an assured deal, that there will be minority representation as it relates to marijuana licensing or cannabis licensing. So we do have a bill, and I think it will pass. It is passed the Senate committee. It came out of committee. It went over to the House, and now it's back in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try and hash out the last little bit of this. The idea is real simple. Let's expand the number of licensees, okay? Let's just be candid. Once you get one of these licenses, I don't want to say it's a license to grow money, but guess what? You're going to make a lot of money.
This is both growing,
processing, and dispensing, you know? And this idea of expanding the number of licensees gives the potential for one of the licensees to be a minority. I think they're thinking about two or three.
Four.
And go ahead, Barry.
So essentially, are they setting quotas?
No, they're just expanding.
Well, it is a quota. It is a quota.
See, I don't see it as a quota, but I think it's the expansion.
It's the expansion, but as the bill is written, it's going to be virtually impossible for anybody but a minority to get one of these four licenses. And the problem here is a broader problem with the way the state has gone about setting up this medical marijuana program, in that they're virtually giving away these licenses that could well turn out to be a license to print money.
Mm-hmm.
You could look upon this as an enrichment bill. Whoever gets these licenses, and it's, I think, 14 new licenses, it could be flush with cash once they get up and running. And the state is virtually giving this away for nothing.
So far, most of the people who have gotten licenses have not been minorities.
Right, although a lot of the companies that have gotten the licenses have minority members as shareholders, if you will. However, the demand has been from the Black Caucus that they want their fair share, basically. And it is an enrichment type of bill, but the problem is that legally, can you designate these four licenses in this way and not be in violation of the law?
Right. And the other part is that the Legislative Black Caucus has made this simple argument. Blacks are a large users of marijuana, and why not us? And, Delegate Cheryl Glenn, who's been,
the head of the Black Caucus.
No, she's no longer the head. She's the former head. And, I talked to her about this. And, Cheryl was out in front, Delegate Glenn, let me make sure I call her by her former title, was out in front of this long before it was popular. And this whole idea, because her former husband suffered in the latter stages of his life, and she said she did not want to see people suffer like that.
Yeah, it's a real shame that Maryland has messed up the process of allowing medical marijuana to be dispensed. But it's been just a debacle almost from day one. And it could well continue with this bill we could end up in litigation yet again that's going to delay the award of these licenses for a while. It's unfortunate because there are these people
who need it,
who very much need it, right, and can't get it.
And we are still very, we're not there yet, but we're close to having legalized marijuana in the state of Maryland. It comes up. Just general marijuana.
Fodder for a whole nother show that we should talk about. That's Charles Robinson of Maryland Public Television here on The Record on WIPR. Also here is Barry Raskovar of the blog Political Maryland. We're talking about the last day of the legislative session today. Barry, I want to talk about legislation that Governor Hogan has vetoed and vetoes the Democratic legislature has overridden. Governor Hogan, we played a clip at the beginning of the show of Governor Hogan explaining last week that he was vetoing a bill because it would create, quote, a disgusting cesspool of cronyism and corruption, end quote. That is the very legislation to which you have devoted your latest column on politicalmaryland.com. Tell us about it.
Well, everything Hogan said is pure political campaign propaganda.
You better tell them what this is about. This is about school construction.
This is about school construction funds and how they're allocated and whether the Board of Public Works, controlled by Governor Hogan and Controller Peter Francho, whether they're going to have the final say. The legislature decided they should not, and they've created a new commission that will dole out the school construction funds based on the analysis by a professional staff as to which schools have the most pressing needs. And here's the thing. When Hogan talks about cronyism and when he talks about corruption, well, Governor Hogan will be controlling this commission.
He'll have most of the appointees.
Yes, he has most of the appointees.
But it's not as direct a control as...
No,
the Board of Public Works now has.
And he cannot use the Board of Public Works to grandstand, as he and the controller have done, on a regular basis, browbeating local education officials over school funding issues. That's been taken away from him. But this whole notion that it's somehow going to be corrupt, I don't understand that at all, because for at least 40 years, there's been not a whiff of corruption in the school construction funding program. It's pure political campaign rhetoric.
And the legislature also wrote another veto that I'm aware of, and this was a bill that will, because the veto was overridden, allow teachers to use an outside arbitrator when they are being disciplined. Have I missed any vetoes or any overrides in this session?
No, just wait. We might get some more. It's always funny because, you know, on the last day, one of the reasons why these vetoes are important, specifically as it relates to the governor, if he doesn't sign them, they go into law. But if he vetoes them, while the legislature is in session, they can come back and override it. Right. If not, they're going to wait until 2019.
Except this time.
Yeah.
Explain.
Because there's a provision in the state constitution that when a new legislature is elected, they cannot vote on a bill that was passed by the old legislature. That's forbidden. So anything that the governor vetoes now stands.
They feel so strongly, they try to call a special session.
Unless they call a special session this summer, which is highly, highly unlikely.
In an election year.
Yes, highly
unlikely.
Nobody
wants to be in Annapolis during an election year.
So what do you see as veto bait?
Well, there's one particular one that would put two teachers on the state school board. And the two teachers would have to be nominated by the teachers union that Hogan has been fighting for 3.5 years. I think that is the prime candidate for a veto. It's still up in the air. It'll probably be passed sometime today.
Right. And watch this crime bill. I mean, there are some things that the governor does not like. He's not thrilled with expungement. If the expungement aspect of a piece of legislation comes up, he may opt to go, you know what, I don't like this. And
how would that play? As I assume any decision now is being looked at through a political lens for the campaign.
Sure.
Would vetoing the crime bill be a plus for Governor Hogan in the election?
No, see, I think the exact opposite. I think that the governor runs on this. They didn't do what I told them to do. I mean, they didn't. They are soft on crime. You know, yeah, we got a purple state, but understand this. There are a lot of Democrats who voted for Larry Hogan. And you might not like it, but guess what? He's still the most popular politician in the state.
Yeah.
I'll give you the last word, Barry.
Okay. Yes. Everything that happens from here till midnight has to do with the election. And it's funny because probably the results of the election won't even depend on what the legislature does or doesn't do. It will depend on whether or not we have a national Democratic wave against Donald Trump that is so strong that it could even threaten Governor Hogan here in Maryland.
Well, we'll have a lot more to talk about in the election, and I hope I can ask both of you back to to discuss that in a straightforward
happy
way.
Happy signy die.
Happy signy die. Barry Raskovar writes about Maryland government and politics for the blog Political Maryland. Charles Robinson covers the legislature and other issues for Maryland Public Television. We have links to their reporting at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Thanks for listening this morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Hope you'll be with us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.